Welcome, everyone, to episode 33 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, the chairman of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we are joined by this week's guest, I would like to briefly mention our sponsor, Amazon.com. If you want to help support this podcast, go to NatsGM.com, click on the Amazon link on the right side of our page, and do your online shopping. One more quick favor. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes, as this helps us gather additional listeners and a larger audience for the show.
This is Joe Emrahi from Baseball Perspectives. Show some want. Listen to the Nats GM Show.
And now I am honored to present my guest this week, Jim Callis. Jim is the senior writer for MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com and was the longtime executive editor at Baseball America. The inaugural guest on this show nearly 1 year ago, I am honored to have him back on the show. Jim, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks, Ryan. Glad to be here.
Once again, thank you so much for making some time tonight. I know we're just a few weeks out from the MLB draft now, and there was nobody else that I could think of to have on the show and prepare us in such a crazy draft year coming up.
No, it is. I mean, it just seems like every week we find out about a new guy being hurt, and it's going to be, I think, a very difficult year if you're picking in the top third of the draft. I know, just look at the top 10 picks, for instance. I come up with like maybe five guys I think are locks to go in the top 10, and I mean, obviously there'll have to be 10 that are picked, but it's just, you know, there are going to be guys even in the top 10 who are going, you know, higher than they would go in a normal draft.
Well, let me start with, first of all, last year's top pick, Brady Aiken, and Mike Mattuella. I want to kind of lump them together. It looked like they were the two big names in some ways coming into this year, and now both have had Tommy John. Where do you see those guys going now?
That's a tough call, and you're right. I mean, those two, I mean, Brendan Rodgers and those two guys were the top three prospects coming into the year, at least on our MLBPipeline.com list in December. And, you know, on one hand, you can say you can look at Lucas Giolito with the Nationals. And you look at last year with Hoffman, you know, with the Blue Jays going ninth overall and Fetty going to the Nationals, you know, right on the heels of Giolito a couple of years before, and saying, well, you know, guys are still going pretty good with Tommy John, but there's kind of complicating issues with both of these guys. You know, Aiken obviously was number one overall pick in last year's draft, and that deal blew up after a post-draft physical, reportedly led to concerns on the Astros' part that his ligament in his elbow was unusually small. And lo and behold, he blows out the elbow, you know, pitching his first game this spring at the IMG Postgraduate Academy. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. I haven't seen the medical report, so this is just more hearsay. But there is, you know, apparently it was, you know, a skimpier ulnar collateral ligament than usual. And so there's some concern, although I don't think there's much track record. There's no real, you know, history of somebody having this condition coming back from it. You know, is he more likely to re-injure it? Is the rehab going to take longer? There are more concerns about Aiken than there are with, you know, say, run-of-the-mill Tommy John surgery. And then with Mattuella, you know, the problem with him is, and it goes beyond him with just Tommy John surgery, he's got spondylosis, which is a back condition he's dealt with. It caused him problems last year. He's basically been hurt or shut down all three of his years at Duke, even before the Tommy John surgery. You know, barely pitched in summer ball. In 3 years of college and summer ball, I mean, your typical pitcher would probably pitch, you know, if you started from day one, I guess, as freshman, you might pitch 300, 350 innings. He's pitched 140. And so there's no track record of Michael Mattuella, even before the Tommy John, of being healthy enough to make it through, you know, 14 or 15 weeks in the college season, let alone 6 months of a major league season. So, you know, we're going to have a new top 100 list coming out next week. And as of now, you know, we're still tinkering it because it seems like there's constant injuries to update. But we've got Aiken at 22 and Mattuella at 23. And if you told me those guys went in the top 10, that somebody would buy low and cut a deal with them, I could see that, or I could see them going lower than where we have them. Because while teams and scouts, I think, are somewhat willing to say, okay, you know, Tommy John surgery, the track record's good, we feel pretty good about it. There's more than just Tommy John surgery with these two guys, so it's a concern.
Who do you think goes ahead of the other, Aiken or Matuella?
Well, we have Aiken right ahead of Matuella, but I mean, to be honest, I mean, I think that just comes down to personal preference. I mean, you have to, and I mean, I don't even know if anybody, I don't think anybody's seen medical records on Brady Aiken yet, but I mean, a lot of that will determine on when teams actually get a look at the medical records on both of these guys. I mean, I think Matuella's Tommy John surgery was considered to be, you know, routine for Tommy John surgeries, but you know, you have the back issue and the fact that he's never really stayed healthy. So it's, I mean, you're really, you know, I mean, there's more risk with both these guys. You know, I, you know, without seeing medical records, you know, I'll take the lefty who, you know, was the number one pick in last year's draft before he got hurt in Aiken, but you know, we'll have to see. You know, those guys are such wild cards right now.
Yeah, does it help them that the top of the draft, as you alluded to, is a little weaker than some years? Will that help them? Or, like you said, do you think maybe they could see themselves slide down the board because there are a fair amount, there's some depth, you know, in the middle of the first round?
I mean, it helps them somewhat. I mean, if it was a stronger draft, I mean, you'd have more healthy guys you really like to take ahead of them. But I think even, you know, I think the ultimate factor for both these guys will be what teams make their medical reports and what team physicians say about these guys regardless of the draft class. So they're kind of, you know, I mean, it almost doesn't really matter. I think that's just going to matter so much more than what the rest of the draft class looks like. I mean, if your team doctor says we can't touch this guy or we can't touch both of them, you know, that's going to rule them out. And there are teams that are very conservative medically in the draft, so it's not like you're going to have 30 teams in play for these guys.
Well, do you think there's a chance we see either or both go back to school next year?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Brady Aiken, that would be tough because it would be tough. I'll tell you why it would be tough, because they both had the Tommy John surgery recently. So, I mean, I guess they could come back by the end of the season, but there's not much of a window to really go out and prove much, you know, to pro teams to where you really enhance your draft status. I think, you know, realistically, if these guys, their goal, and I assume it would be to go out and have a pro career, if that's the ultimate goal, you're almost better off signing, committing yourself 100% to rehab. You know, I mean, you don't have to go to classes. You could be full-time baseball. You know, you're getting better medical care, you know, at the major league level than you are at the college level, not to knock the college, you know, rehab programs, or Brady Aiken's at the IMG Academy, not to knock that either, but I mean, you're going to get better medical care and you can devote yourself 100% to your baseball career. I think they both sign, unless the medical reports are so scary for whatever reason on these guys that it was going to make them plummet in the draft, in which case then they might try to reestablish their value. But I just think, you know, it's not like they're going to be at full strength. You know, when you come back from Tommy John, typically your command isn't good right away. So, I mean, I think it would be really pushing it to expect these guys to come out and, you know, really enhance their stock, you know, 6 weeks before next year's draft. So I think they both sign, you know, unless the medical reports, you know, really alarm people, and it's just too early to know on that.
The next name I got to ask you about, you mentioned a couple minutes ago, was Brendan Rodgers. I've seen him, you know, I think we've all seen him either in the Affleck game or the Perfect game and that stuff. But for those of those in the audience that are listening that don't know him, can you talk a little bit about Rodgers and, you know, maybe give kind of a comparison if possible?
Yeah, you know, he's a high school shortstop from Lake Mary, Florida, 6'1", 195, right-handed hitter. You know, the comp, you know, kind of like in terms of the way he plays, I think it's kind of similar to an Addison Russell type of game. You know, I think this is a guy who can hit for power and average. He's got a real quick bat. I mean, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but not so big that he can't play shortstop. But, I mean, he gets just a real quick bat, easy stroke, you know, advanced approach at the plate, very mature hitter, solid runner, good arm, solid defender. You know, I don't think this guy's going to Gold Glove at shortstop. I think he can definitely play there. And, you know, you're looking at five solid or better tools. You know, has a chance to, you know, be the first high school shortstop to go number one since Carlos Correa did 3 years ago. I like, he was my favorite prospect coming into the draft, at least favorite in terms of, you know, the guy I thought was the best prospect. And nothing's changed that. You know, he's had a, his team didn't even make the Florida playoffs. So his high school season's done. Maybe he'll play in some all-star games, you know, as the draft approaches. But he came out and showed everybody what they wanted to see this spring.
Is he a lock for 1-1, or is he, what are his chances of going first overall?
I don't think there's ever a lock. And, you know, you have the Diamondbacks, you know, whole new front office, new scouting director, although Derek Ladner, you know, was scouting director for several years with the Royals. So I don't think anybody has a great feel for exactly what the Diamondbacks are trying to do. I think he's got to be the favorite right now. You know, it doesn't mean the Diamondbacks see it the same way. I mean, to me, the other two guys who I think would be in that race, and I think it's a three player race right now, would be UC Santa Barbara right-hander Dylan Tate. You know, mid-90s fastball, hard slider, great spring, although he missed a start last week with strained trap muscle. Supposed to pitch this weekend. We'll see. You know, obviously his health would factor into that. And then, you know, Dansby Swanson, shortstop from Vanderbilt. You know, Dansby, I don't think he's got the pop. He doesn't have the pop that Brendan Rodgers have, but he's a very good shortstop, all-around shortstop as well. I mean, I think he's got a hit for average, more doubles power, plus runner, a little quicker than Brendan Rodgers. And the question on Swanson coming into the year was, could he play shortstop, because he played second base last year at Vanderbilt on their College World Series championship team, and he's played very well at shortstop. I don't think there's any questions there. He's probably a comparable defender to Brendan Rodgers. And I think, you know, I look at Dansby, you know, great makeup too. I don't know if Dansby, from a pure tools perspective, is that classic guy who would go 1-1 in the draft. But that said, he's a guy who could definitely stay at shortstop, and he's got offensive potential. And I think, not that you're necessarily going to draft this way, but of the three guys, I think Dansby Swanson's got the higher floor than Brendan Rodgers or Dylan Tate. So I'm a little conflicted on Dansby, because I love him as a college player, and I really like him as a prospect. And I always feel like I'm running him down when I describe him in this context. I don't think he's quite that 1-1 type of guy, but he could go 1-1. I mean, his name, I do think, is in that running. I've had guys tell me, you know, that aren't picking one or two, that they wouldn't necessarily pick him one, but if they're picking two, he'd be the guy. And he's a really, really good player. So I think those are the three guys. You know, again, if it were me drafting, if the draft were today, I have a pretty easy decision taking Brendan Rodgers, because Dylan Tate wasn't able to pitch last weekend. And I had Brendan Rodgers number one coming in. You know, I wouldn't say by any means it's 100% for the Diamondbacks, but, like, I know if it were me, at least as of this moment, I would take Brendan Rodgers. I don't know if easily would be the right word, but I don't think the decision would be that tough of a call right now, just because Tate, you know, his health is a little uncertain, and I, you know, it's apples to apples pretty much. I mean, they're both shortstops. One guy's high school, one guy's college, but I like Brendan Rodgers' tools a little bit better than Dansby Swanson's.
Well, and as you said to me off air when we were catching up and chit-chatting, this is shaping up to maybe the strength of the draft is middle infielders, particularly shortstops at the college level. You mentioned Swanson, obviously the high schooler Rodgers. Are there a few other shortstops that should go in the first round as well?
Yeah, I think Alex Bregman from LSU is a top five pick. I mean, he might be a second base. I think on a team that has a good defensive shortstop, Alex Bregman will be a second baseman at the major league level. I think he could play shortstop, but he'd be an average defender there, and teams usually want a better than average defender at shortstop. Can really hit a little bit more pop than Dansby Swanson, maybe a little bit less quickness. I think he's going to go in the first, you know, 5-10 picks. On the college side, you got Kevin Newman from Arizona, won back-to-back Cape League batting titles. I think he's more of a second baseman, but I think he's going to be a first-rounder, potential first-rounder. Richie Martin from Florida, very good defender. You know, he's a better defender than any of these college shortstops we've mentioned so far. Hasn't really hit with much authority except for on the Cape Cod League last summer, which is a proving ground, but hasn't quite hit that way this spring. But I think he still probably goes in the first round. You've got Blake Trahan from Louisiana Lafayette, could sneak into the first round. And you've got Kyle Holder at San Diego, who, you know, some scouts are saying he's the best defensive shortstop on the college side that they can remember in a long time. And most of your college shortstops do wind up playing second base at the big league level if they get there. But, you know, Kyle Holder is even described defensively in more glowing terms than Devin Marrero was when Devin Marrero was a first-round pick a couple years ago. And he was kind of the last shortstop who was a lock to stay there, who was a first-round pick coming out of college. You know, Kyle Holder, I think there's enough questions about his bat. The first round's probably a stretch. But somebody who believes he can hit and maybe he hit with a little bit of authority, I mean, I think he compares very favorably to to Richie Martin, and he's a better defender. And, you know, another guy I'll throw in there who's probably a second baseman at the next level, Mikey White from Alabama, is one of those, like, gritty, great makeup guys who can really hit. You know, probably winds up being at second base, but, you know, he's a college shortstop too. And, you know, like I said, he might sneak into the first round.
Of that group, besides Swanson, kind of, do you have a favorite that sticks out or –
Well, I think Bregman's clearly the guy. I mean, because I mean, we've got Swanson ranked. He'll be three on our neck on the MLB Pipeline's updated list, top 100. That'll be out next week. And Bregman's five. So I think most people have those guys. After that, I think it's a lot more up in the air. I mean, there's some buzz around Kevin Newman. I'm probably not the biggest Kevin Newman fan in the world. I mean, I respect him, and you know, anybody's listening to this, I'm not trying to run these guys down, but I'm just trying to be objective when you're breaking these guys down. I think Kevin Newman can really hit. I'm not sure he has another tool that's better than average. I don't think he does, and I just don't know how well that profile plays at the big league level. But Bregman's clearly the number two college shortstop behind Swanson.
Okay, sounds good. I want to transition, if I can, now and talk a few more local players. You know, prospects this year. Nathan Kirby, I know, started the year, looked like he even was rising up boards, and now I think he was hurt or missed a start. Tell me a little bit about Kirby, please.
Yeah, you know, Nathan Kirby coming into the year was the best college lefty in the draft. That, you know, I think was very solid top 10 pick, and you know, his control has been off for much of the year, as it was, you know, he totally lost his control at the College World Series last year in the championship round. Stuff, you know, was pretty good at the beginning of the season, then kind of, you know, was more average, you know, instead of plus. Recently left his last start over the weekend after three innings with a lat strain, and is out 6 to 8 weeks. He may not pitch again before the draft. You know, maybe he gets back for regionals or whatever, but I don't know. You know, he's another one who's tough to figure too. You know, a strain, I believe by definition is you know, kind of a mild tear. You know, is, you know, sometimes, you know, lat strain becomes, you know, a shoulder problem. So who knows? I mean, he's gonna be another guy. The medical records can be important. You know, you didn't see him pitch well before he got hurt. You know, and like we were talking about with Aiken and Machuella, you know, you can, some teams can look at like, hey, we might have a chance to buy low on a guy we thought was going to be a certain top 10 pick, and other teams or medical staffs can say, you know, don't take a guy, you know, when we look at his medical record. So I, you know, I would still think he's first rounder. We've got him at number 20, on our updated list right ahead of Machuella and Newman, but with these medical guys, it's hard to say until teams get the medical records from the players, and it's a little bit early for that. That typically happens closer to the draft, so we'll have to see on him.
I know this is a tough hypothetical, but where does a healthy Kirby go in this draft?
Well, okay, well, I'll throw the question back at you, Ryan. Is this like, well, I'll answer it this way. Let's say he didn't have this lat strain. His stuff has been down, and I think he was already sliding into that, you know, second half of the first round, even before this news. You know, if you saw Nathan Kirby at his best, if he was the guy, you know, threw no hitter last season, was dominant at times for Virginia up until his last start at the College World Series, and the way this draft has shaken out, I think Nathan Kirby could have been a top five overall pick. But you know, it's tough because he hasn't shown that kind of stuff for a while.
Yeah, it's funny. If you had done a top five, you know, try to project who's going to go in the top five, you know, 6 months ago, maybe none of the five, maybe Brendan Rodgers might be the only one that actually goes in the top five.
He would be. I mean, I know just looking at our list coming into the year, we had Brendan Rodgers number one. He's still number one. We had Machuella two. We had Brady Aiken three. We had Walker Buehler of Vanderbilt four. I think he'll still go like in the probably 5 to 15 range. So he hasn't dropped too far. And then we had Nathan Kirby five. And you know, I mean, maybe Walker Buehler could sneak back in there, but Brendan Rodgers is the only lock of those five guys to go in the top five, you know, now that we're a couple months into the season.
And that's another two names I'd love to ask you about. It's just the two Vanderbilt pitchers. What are your thoughts on Buehler and Fulmer, and kind of where do they go?
You know, they're kind of like Dansby Swanson for me in that I really like all those guys. I struggle with them all a little bit draft-wise, and this is nitpicking, but, you know, like I was saying with Swanson, I really like Dansby Swanson. I think at worst he's the third best player in this draft, and he's probably got the highest floor of the guys at the top. He just doesn't have the classic tools of a guy you're going to pick in the top three that you're going to say we're going to build the franchise around him. I mean, is Dansby Swanson a a shortstop on a playoff team? Yeah, I think he could be. But he's not. You're not going to be building your team around Dansby Swanson per se. He's a good player. You know, likewise, I like Carson Fulmer. I like the fastball. I like the slider. I like the energy he brings. But the bottom line is he's not a big guy. There's a ton of effort in his delivery. He doesn't throw as many strikes as you'd like. And I mean, we have Carson Fulmer at seventh on our list. I think there's a good chance he goes in the top 10 where we have him. I just think long term, when I look at him, and it's really easy, it's a cop out. You can, a lot of these guys say, oh, I don't like this or I don't like that. That guy's a reliever. But man, I just look at the size and the effort and just kind of, you know, fringy control. And I think that guy's a closer, which is great. But you don't typically draft a closer in the top 10. You're drafting starting pitchers. And then Buehler, really like Walker Buehler. Like I said, he was fourth on our list coming in the year. Really good in the Cape Cod League, and even with a brief cameo with Team USA last year. You know, part of that Vanderbilt pitching staff that won a College World Series last year. I like him more than Tyler Beattie, who was the Giants' first-round pick last year. And I think he's got a better chance to start the Carson Fulmer. He's got more polish. He's got a deeper – he doesn't have the power Fulmer has. It's more – you know, where Carson Fulmer can really light up the gun at times and really, you know, make you look bad with a slider. Buehler's got more solid than real true, you know, plus, you know, knee-buckling type of stuff. But he's got four pitches, and he throws them for strikes, and he mixes them. And I love the way pitches and mound presence and the delivery and the arm, all that stuff works. But, now here comes the but, he's 6'1", 165 pounds. And, you know, I know, you know, you can't just say, you know, oh, short right-handers don't succeed, because some of them do. But all that said, there aren't a whole lot of 6'1", 165-pound starting pitchers in the big leagues for a reason, you know, because there's not a lot of durability with those type of guys. And so that would be a little bit of an eye on Buehler. Missed his first two starts this year, but he's been fine since then. But that would bother me. Well, not bother me, but that's just my hedge on him. I really like him, but like you just don't see a lot of 6'1", 165-pound starters in the big leagues. So, you know, if you're looking for an absolute starting pitcher, that one might be a little bit tough. But I do like him. I like all three of those guys a lot, and right now they're all in our top 10. It'll be interesting to see where they go, you know, where teams, you know, wind up putting them with the positives and then the concerns you have on those guys.
Well, I've been sitting on the University of Maryland most of the spring, at least when this weather in the area has been allowing me to. And I'm my personal cheese balls, to steal a BA phrase, is Brandon Lau and Jose Quas. Can you discuss them a little bit and kind of talk me off the ledge? Because I'm in love with both of these guys.
They're both good. I mean, I think they're probably... Yeah, I don't know what anybody's signability is at this point. But, I mean, I don't think they're going to necessarily be top five round picks. I mean... Quas is interesting. He's a third baseman with tools. I mean, there's some power. You know, I think he ran pretty well at the Fenway Park workout last year at the Cape Cod League. I don't think he runs quite that well. But, I mean, you can look at him and you can see, okay, this guy profiles at third base. You know, could play third defensively. He's got pop. Problem is there's an awful lot of swing and miss with Jose Quas. And, I think it's going to, you know, the thing is, I guess with the draft, you don't get drafted on consensus. Usually you get drafted by the team that likes you the most. So maybe he does go, you know, top five rounds. But, you know, that's a concern with him. You know, with Lau, I mean, he's having a really nice year for the Terrapins, obviously. You know, the problem – well, not a problem. I mean, if you're breaking him down, he plays second base, which isn't exactly, you know, like a prospect. Most of your pro second basemen were college or high school shortstops. He's not a real big guy because he's 5'10", what, about 180, which isn't too bad. And he's a redshirt sophomore. And again, I don't know his signability, but, you know, as a sophomore, he's got more leverage. Now, you know, he's older, you know, because he missed a year because of injury, so he's 21. So maybe he wants to get his career started. But, you know, so there's that. I mean, I think the first pick off that team, you know, probably goes in the top three rounds. Is Alex Robinson out of the bullpen. You know, lefty reliever, you know, plus fastball. Slider can be a plus pitch at times. I think he can move pretty – you know, I guess we say about all relievers. He can move pretty quick, but he can move pretty quick because he's a reliever. You know, so I think he has a chance to maybe go in the third round or so. And Kevin Mooney, you know, is probably in that same range with Quas and Lau where, you know, not necessarily you know, unbelievable stuff, but he can pitch and mix some pitches. You know, Kevin Mooney has a chance to, I think, you know, go decently too.
Okay, fair enough. You talked me off, Lau. I've fallen in love with that hit tool this
spring. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I'm just saying that from a pro standpoint, though, he's having a great year, but, you know, second base isn't always, you know, a position that attracts a lot of guys, and, you know, he's a sophomore. So, I mean, now if he signed up, I mean, again, could he go 6-10? I could see that. I just don't know if he goes much higher than that.
All right. I can see that. That's fair. Final question, Jim. I don't want to keep you too long. I used the term cheeseball in my previous question, but who are your cheeseball or cheeseballs in this draft?
You know, I mean, some of these guys, I mean, are getting acclaimed, but I mean, guys who I think people don't, or, you know, haven't been widely hyped, or people don't realize good. At Missouri State, which has sent like 10 or 11 pitchers to the big leagues in the last decade, they have a kid named John Harris who kind of broke out a little bit in the Cape. He's having a great spring. I think he could be a top 10 pick, and I don't think he's necessarily gotten that kind of hype. In a draft that's really short on catchers, there's a kid from Georgia named Tyler Stevenson who could sneak into the first round. Really good all-around catcher. I like Tyler Stevenson a lot. Trying to think of some other sleepers. You know, more of a sleeper guy. I mean, he's a name, you know, especially because his dad, but Mike Matheny's kid, Tate, isn't exactly the toolsiest guy. He's more of kind of average tools, but he really plays the game well. You know, center fielder with some hitting ability, might be some more power in there. You know, somebody could get him in the third or fourth round, and he might be a better player than people realize.
Okay, that sounds good. Those are some good choices, particularly Harris. I've heard his name a few times, but he's definitely certainly a first-day pick for sure. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I think he's getting mentioned. I mean, I think now if you look at various lists, he'll be, you know, everybody's kind of coming around, okay, this guy is probably going to be a first-round pick. But, I mean, shoot, I think he could be a top 10 pick. And, you know, if you wanted to play devil's advocate with guys, you could make a case. I mean, I'm not saying I would rank him here now. You could make a case that John Harris is the best college pitcher in this draft. He's definitely a starter. You know, Dylan Tate has not started in college before this year, and he's come down with this trap deal. You know, we talked about Fulmer. I think Fulmer's a long-term reliever. You know, Buehler, you know, Harris is slender, but he's 6'4". You could see him getting that, you know, putting some weight on and really having that classic pitcher's build. And then Kyle Funkhauser is the other guy who's probably going to go top five out of Louisville. And I think John Harris is better stuff, and he throws more strikes. So I think, while I have Harris ranked behind all those guys, you know, he's 10th on our upcoming MLB pipeline list, and that would be the fifth college pitcher. You could make a case that that guy is the best college pitcher in the draft. So he really intrigues me.
Okay, one more question, if you'll indulge me. Give me a top five right today.
You mean like who the teams would pick? Well, yes. And this is more kind of educated guess because I haven't even tried to figure out who teams are going to take. I think the number one pick that's obvious right now for Arizona, you know, as I said before, is Brendan Rodgers. You got the Astros at two. I could see them taking a healthy Dylan Tate. If Dylan Tate's healthy, I could see him going two. Rockies are picking three. And I don't really have a great feel for the Rockies. I mean, I'm going to say Dansby Swanson just because I think those are the clear top three guys in the draft. Rangers picking four, even though we have Funkhauser four on our list, I don't see him being necessarily their type of guy. I could see them taking whoever they think is the best athlete in the draft. I don't know if that's, you know, Daz Cameron, Nick Plummer. I don't know who they pick, and I think the Astros at five, if they get Tate at two, come back and take the best hitter on the board, which would probably be Alex Bregman from LSU. So, you know, at four, I don't know. I just don't have a good feel for the Rangers, but I don't think they would take Kyle Funkhauser, who's fourth on our board. I think they would go for some kind of athletic type, you know, maybe Mike Nikorak, high school pitcher from Pennsylvania, you know, who's pretty athletic.
Yeah, that's actually a great name. I'm trying to somehow run in and see him sometime before the draft, so. Well, Jim, thank you so much. You've always been so kind to my site. It's so great to have you back on the show. I think we've done a pretty nice draft preview in a quick amount of time. I'd love to give you a spot here for your plugs where people can find you on Twitter and certainly where they're going to be able to find you during the draft.
Yeah, that's, I appreciate that. And, you know, all my work, you know, I work for the MLB Pipeline section of MLB.com. So you can go to MLBpipeline.com and see, you know, see all my stuff there. On Twitter, I'm at Jim Callis, MLB, you know, Jim, C-A-L-L-I-S, MLB, all one word. And I try to link all my stories and I interact with fans, try to answer a lot of questions on there. I'll be part of MLB Network's draft coverage again. We'll do also not just on draft night, but about a week before the draft. We'll do a top 50 draft prospects show where we'll break down the top 50 prospects in the draft. So I'll be on MLB Network, and I usually do a ton of radio and podcast appearances leading up to the draft, and I try to reference all those on my Twitter site too. So I'll be very busy here over the next 6+ weeks, but it's my favorite time of year baseball-wise, and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I will say this is probably a draft that I'm looking forward to more than some in many years, just because I'm very curious to see how this year shakes out. Like you say, there are a lot of question marks. A lot of guys could go high, could drop, and with all the new signing issues and everything else the last few years, I'm really curious to see how this plays out.
And I think we're in for a lot more uncertainty, too, because, you know, like I said, I mean, if you talked to me a week ago, I mean, when you asked me about Kirby, we would have talked about how he's sliding a little bit, but, you know, he's out. You know, we'll see on Dylan Tate, you know, with this trap muscle. He's supposed to pitch this weekend, but, you know, if he doesn't, then, you know, he's going to start sliding down some boards, too. You know, and we'll have to see how his stuff holds up. I mean, there's still – he's got 4 or 5 more starts before the draft. You know, lock a change. And, I mean, shoot, with the way this has been going, there'll probably be 2 or 3 more guys hurt between now and the draft, because it just seems like the injury train never ends.
Yeah, it's really caught this year's draft class, unfortunately. So – well, Jim, thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I can't thank you enough for coming back on the show, and I look forward to watching and hearing and reading all your work in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, anytime, Ryan. I always enjoy talking with you. I can talk draft for hours and hours, as anybody who knows me knows all too well, and it was good talking to you, and anytime. Glad to help out.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And that was my conversation with Jim Callis. I want to thank him for coming on again. First repeat guest we've had, and I'm very honored to have him on. I certainly would not be writing about prospects or doing anything that I'm doing today without the work that Jim Callis did, you know, 10 and 15 years ago. So thank you to him, and thank you for always being so generous and kind to our site. So we are done for episode 33. Bye for now.